is Friday. It's December 2nd, 2016. I'm John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast, portions of which you can hear on my Saturday show at 1:30 on WGN Radio.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the oft-quoted Tribune columnist who appears Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays in your newspaper.
Let the record show I'm the briefest every week. Okay, go ahead.
Kristen McQuarrie, who's even briefer, because she's not here today. Eric's colleague at the Chicago Tribune may be stepping in on this podcast.
She's in a meeting, and she may be toddling up here in a moment. So
it's too bad she's not here to hear this.
Well, let's talk about her while she's right. Not here.
Toddling. Here's what happens when you elect a game show host to be president. You get a victory tour, and behind door number two, 1,000 jobs for workers at the Carrier plant in Indiana. Donald Trump, unaware that he won the election, is still campaigning, and he's getting played by his own hubris and by Carrier. We've lost 7 million manufacturing jobs in the last 10 years or so, saving 1,000, while still losing about 1,000 at Carrier, by the way. It's not yet proof that we have a Trump blueprint to make America great again, but boy, that's what he's pitching. Eric, what's your thought about, I'm tying those two stories together this week, what's your thought about all of that?
Well, my thought is, I think you use the word played, what happened was that Carrier extracted from the from Indiana, not from Donald Trump. Trump has no power right now, but they extracted significant tax breaks over the next 10 years in order to keep, I think, something like 800 of the jobs. The exact numbers I'm not clear on. But in a sense, Carrier held up Indiana for some special treatment, and they got it. And this is not what Trump was talking about on the campaign.
Well, it's quite the opposite, actually.
He was talking about, you know, if you go, we're going to hit you with a significant tax burden to bring your products back into our country. So we are going to penalize you. Instead, they basically are trying to bribe them into staying. And that has worked. This is not scalable, is my point, is that you can't go to every manufacturer who might get a better job, get a better deal overseas and say, well, we'll pay you taxpayer money to stay here. So it's a good press pop. I agree the visuals
it's
of this
subsidy.
Are good, but it's a subsidy. And this goes against what Republicans are always saying, that the government shouldn't be playing favorites. It should be leveling the playing field. That's not what they did here. They didn't cut corporate or business taxes in Indiana across the board. They cut them for Carrier.
It's a win for Donald Trump. You're right, it's not scalable, and you're right, it's maybe not the long-term right thing to do, but it's the perfect thing to do when you're putting together your cabinet and beginning to take office to say, look, I delivered on this promise. It works for him.
Yeah, I mean, I admit my analysis is a bit pointy-headed.
Thoughtful. Just say thoughtful.
Well, I don't think it's too hard. I mean, why isn't it obvious to everybody that Carrier, which is like a $50 billion company and has 10% of its money from federal defense contracts, they're happy to, you know, spend or lose a few million dollars in the name of saving $5 billion worth of revenue.
Well, that's
they make
a great
Donald
point.
Trump and the administration's point, they're his champions now. They're the golden kid. You don't think that's not going to play well for them down the road?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right, John. And you know, they got this subsidy, and they are enormously profitable. So you can't really argue like, oh, this poor company, it's going to go under if it doesn't get the money that it needs from the state of Indiana. And you're also right to point out that they are a major defense contractor.
United Technologies, or whatever they are.
And I can imagine some of the conversations might have been, you know, well, you got some nice Defense Department contracts here. I hate to see anything happen to them.
Well, and that's okay, isn't it? I mean, that's
use that
leverage.
Voice again, Eric.
Sure,
I've never heard that one
sure
before.
Sure, that's okay. I mean, that's a fine. I mean, when you are playing, but you can't play that card with every company.
No, you
can't. With every ball bearing manufacturer in the country, you can't say, hey, you want me to do the voice again?
My favorite part of the speech, though, is when he was talking about how he was watching the nightly news and he saw some guy saying, Donald Trump said he was going to save Carrier. And Trump said, I never said that, did I? And then he said, then I looked at the tape and I did say I was going to save Carrier. He goes, but I was speaking euphemistically. I wasn't talking about Carrier. I was talking about everyone else.
Well, that does sort of lend itself to the conversation of do Trump's words matter?
No.
I mean, isn't that an interesting narrative? Now what we're supposed to learn is that when Trump speaks, we don't take him literally. We know what he means generally, but all of the specifics he cites are more examples in principle, not in fact. I don't even know what I just said. I mean, it's really going to be hard to either easy to justify or hard to know what he's talking about if we give him that kind of a pass all the time.
Well, but when he didn't get the pass, it didn't matter or it helped him. So I don't know what calling him out on everything he says, incorrectly or falsely. I don't know what that's going to serve.
Well,
you know,
he said
in Ohio last night that he won in a landslide. You know, he lost the popular vote. He got a lot more electoral votes than everyone thought he was going to get.
But a lot
I don't think you can lose the popular vote and call it a landslide.
Well, and I'm not even sure that three states is the difference between him and Hillary being in the White House. I'm not even sure what a quote unquote landslide is.
Here's the thing I wanted to bring up, and I think you were heading that way. I told you guys words don't matter anymore. And I've been thinking about this a lot. I brought it up on GN earlier this week and just was pilloried for it. But, you know, we used to say when someone would use a bad term, an ill-thought term, the response was, look, words matter. The words you choose matter. And I just think we're in a stage right now where that's no longer true. Words don't matter. And it's not just what, you know, Donald Trump is saying, whether they're true or untrue. It's all of them. I mean, they gin us up. You know, you've got Mitt Romney calling him a fraud and a phony, using these words, ginning up the people who are against Donald Trump, and then, you know, spinning on a dime and offering to go work for him. Now, that might be public service. That might be a great thing to do. But if your words matter, if what he said about Donald Trump he believed, then he couldn't work for him.
Isn't what Mitt Romney is doing exactly what people say they hate about politics, exactly what all these angry voters were saying, we don't like politics as usual, and isn't what Mitt Romney is doing? Romney was kissing Trump's butt 4 years ago when Trump endorsed him, and then he was bashing him last year, and now he's back to kissing his butt again in his public statements. Who knows what he means, what he thinks, what he feels?
Who do you want for Secretary of State, Eric?
Who do I want?
Who do you want to be Secretary of State?
John Kerry.
Choose your second choice.
No, do you see my point? Of the candidates that are in consideration, I'm happy to see Mitt Romney swallow some humble pie and be the lesser of all of those evils.
Yes, I would say that, and I would say that I would prefer that he take the job without eating that humble pie. That he just takes it up and says, you know, the president and I have our differences on many things, but I think...
Well, what's he supposed to say? Every time he walks out of one of those dinners, it looks like he had a crap sandwich. He doesn't look like he's enjoying any of this.
John, I just want to make it clear, I think Mitt Romney's the best choice. That's not what I'm talking about here at all. What I'm talking about is the bigger picture. You know, we've got this incredibly stirred-up electorate because leaders or politicians gin us up with their rhetoric, and then they put that rhetoric behind, and the rest of us are running around in a Michael's store ranting at the clerks. You know what I'm saying? I mean, words either matter or they don't. And if you say those things, whether you're Ted Cruz or Hillary Clinton or Nikki Haley, you got to live those words, too. And that's sort of what is the most discouraging for me right now, that... Mm-hmm. You know, all of them have left a lot of collateral damage along the campaign trail while they're hugging and having dinner in New York.
I think what's important to point out is that I think Steve is actually right. The words don't matter, but what is mattering are the actions. And so you have Donald Trump going on 60 Minutes and saying, no, we're going to preserve the exemption for pre-existing conditions, and we're going to save all the good parts of Obamacare. And then he appoints as his head of Health and Human Services one of the most ardent foes of Obamacare. And across the board, the appointments that he's making, you can talk about all the words they use, but when you look at his actions, the people he has now been appointing to these high-level jobs show that, you know, he is not going to be a moderate. Betsy DeVos, the woman he chose to be education secretary, she is a radical pro-voucher, pro-charter school, privatization of public education force. She's an extremely conservative person. She's not someone who's going to try to, you know, thread the needle or balance the interests of unions and, you know, things like that.
On the other side, he's talking about how the bankers were taking over the world, Goldman Sachs, and now he's appointing them to positions.
Yeah, he kept saying that Hillary Clinton was owned by Goldman Sachs. He was criticizing Cruz for his wife's connections.
I don't care what the ideology is of any of the people that are heading up these administrative posts, if they do a better job or help make America better. For instance, with health care. Isn't the story this week, though, that the more they look at the Affordable Care Act, the more elements they're finding Americans want. They did a survey and said, well, do you want this? Do you want this? Do you want that?
It's always been that way, Johnny.
Everybody said
it.
Yes. Okay, but then so when they actually have to do something, it'll be very interesting to see what happens, Steve. These are all words now. There has been no action on the Affordable Care Act. If they change it, but they keep all the popular elements, I don't care if they call it Trump Care. Mm-hmm. It'll still, if it's still a good health care plan, why would we care what the name of it is?
It's
right?
needed to be tweaked for a long time. It's just that the Republicans in Congress have refused to even try to help make it any better. And so you're absolutely right, John. But
aren't you guys hopeful? I mean,
I am hopeful. I am hopeful because he said he was going to keep those, you know, pre-existing conditions, and some of the other things. Maybe now the Republicans will get off the dime and make the fixes. I think that could be great.
And they're talking about basically either gutting Medicare or turning it into a state block grant program. Maybe that's Medicaid. I can't.
No, that was some Medicare too.
Taking this program that is beloved. And if you remember, George Bush got into this problem. He got into it, I think, in 2004. After he was reelected, he decided he was going to make it his big deal to privatize Social Security. And he just got hammered on that. And he came out, and it was like sort of a semi-popular idea.
People elected him, Eric.
People
wanted this stuff blown up and changed.
They didn't, though, because the more he talked about it, the more people actually thought about it, the lower and lower that poll. People realized, they thought, privatize Social Security, that'd be a good idea. And then they would realize what that would actually mean, and they realized, no, we don't want that. And that's going to happen with changes to Obamacare.
And then came 2008, right, when we would have lost our retirement.
I think what you all need to do, though, is resist the temptation, and we all have it, of hoping these people fail. Because that'll teach them a lesson.
When
they fail, we all fail.
I don't feel that way at all, John. I want them to fix Obamacare and call it Ivanka Care or Trump Care. I don't care.
I want it to
be better. And I also think that he should have wide leeway. You're talking about price at Health and Human Services. He won. He gets to pick who he wants. You know, I don't think there should be these Senate fights unless you find some nominee as a criminal and a derelict, which, you know, may well be. But, I think the winner should get to pick who he wants in his administration. So, no, I don't hope that they fail. I'm just frustrated by the fact that words don't matter.
I agree with that. I would say also that they should say, if they're going to keep their powder dry when they're objecting to people, they should do it for judges and Supreme Court justices. They should, you know, save their objections for truly objectionable people. I mean, and you know, Betsy DeVos, some of these people we talked about, I don't like them. You probably don't like them, but, you know, like I say, the election results matter, and the president ought to have around him or her, him this time, the people that they want. So I mean, that makes sense to me, what you just said. And I don't, you know, want anyone to fail, because obviously when he fails, the country fails.
Right.
So yeah, you'd love it if he was able to bring back all these jobs in West Virginia and get all these manufacturers to come back.
That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
He's a con man. This is the thing. And do I want the con man to be exposed? Yes, I do. I want his lies to be exposed. I want the people who supported him to realize that they were hoodwinked.
Well, you got 4 years, Eric.
Right.
I mean,
so
really.
you want him to be exposed.
I'm pacing myself.
You want him to be exposed, but you want things to get better, right? I mean, that's sort of the dilemma.
Well, let's just talk about what you referenced a minute. What's that, Steve?
Well, Eric's giving me a face. I mean, because I kind of feel, I don't want him to get away with the lying and the obfuscating and all of that, but I don't want the country to go down the
Well, the truth will out, though. I mean, that's my point. You've got 4 years. Trust me, if his economic plans are straw, then we'll discover that in due course.
Well, it depends on what you mean. Do I want him to fail in his plans to, you know, create a deportation force and try to oust people from the country, you know, going door to door? I do want him to fail at that.
I think we need a committee, though, to decide, you know, sort of a bipartisan or some sort of impartial committee to say what we need to pay attention to, which words matter. The deportation force, Eric, that was never real. I know he said it, and I know he said it was real. But the new ethos that Bertrand's talking about is that was never real. That was never his intention. He said it was, but we need to be sort of smarter than that and know that that's not real.
Broad strokes, I would love to see crime come down, which he promised to do. I'd love to see the inner cities bounce back prosper in some ways. I would love to see that. I'd love to see manufacturing jobs come back. I'd love to see taxes be low. I'd love to see deficits come down. I'd love to see all those things. I really would. And if he pulls it off, I will be rendered mute. I will have to be changing to sports or entertainment.
Four years from now, if he pulls it off, you'll wear a Donald Trump wig for the recording of the Mincing Rascals.
A woman at a Michael's store in Chicago went on a bizarre, race-fueled, pro-Trump tirade the day before Thanksgiving. Over 10 minutes of it was posted on social media. It's been viewed over 3.5 million times. A GoFundMe page for the workers who had to put up with that had a $400 goal, and today it has raised over $32,000. This sort of posting using your phone camera as a weapon is fraught with problems. I hate to see the behavior that it captures, but I'm not cheered by what happens afterwards. This captured a woman whose mental health is in question and shamed her far beyond the shame that she created. Eric?
I disagree. I think it's great that people are capturing these moments and they're exposing these people. I don't know what basis you say this woman's mental health is at issue.
Did you watch the video?
I watched the video, and I watched the other video where she was ranting at someone in Pete's. I mean, she is someone who freely gives vent to her darkest.
And who does that? Who walks into a store of strangers and for half an hour rails against Donald Trump?
You ever see those videos taken outside of Trump rallies? You see that video of the guy on the Delta flight?
That was a Trump rally. This was a lady in a craft store. We can talk about the guy on the Delta flight, too. But in the meantime, let's just talk about this lady. That's the sort of thing that used to happen, and everybody rolled their eyes, and then life went on. But instead, it's now this little hate pump that we all watch and click on, and I don't think anything is accomplished by that.
No, I think it did. I think that it serves as a warning to anyone who feels like they can give vent to these kind of sentiments in public, that they are being watched and that the world may be watching them. And I am really happy that a lot of people carry around cameras. I'm glad these things are being captured. I'm glad these
people...
When
you said that in your column, yeah. I thought you were being sarcastic.
No.
I thought, yeah, I get it, Eric. Of course you don't mean that. You were being sincere.
I totally am being sincere. I am really glad this is happening.
Steve, don't you think that sort of vigilantism is...
Wait. I drew the line at vigilantism. I said this, I don't think... And
that's people, exactly what this is.
People went too far when they doxed her. And to dox someone, dox DOX, is to go and find their home phone numbers and their work addresses and to harass them and call them. That goes too far. Naming and shaming somebody, I think...
This woman's life is forever changed.
Oh, it's not.
Oh, are you kidding? All right, Steve, just would you tell us whose side on this you are?
Well, I saw the video. I'm like, oh, my God. And I posted it, you know, right away. I'm like, this is, you know, I'm going to post it. This is huge. And about 20 minutes later, I took it down because I just think she's a little imbalanced, too. I mean, I just think it's an imbalanced behavior. And I felt like by posting it and sharing it and pointing a finger at her terrible behavior, that in a way, I don't know, she might have been the victim. That can't be right. I don't know. I mean, if she's wholly sane and she stands by what she did, then she's not. But I just felt uncomfortable with it.
Well, that's it, though. We don't know. It's so imperfect to me. It's so crude that way.
We've seen so many examples of that in these coffee shops and restaurants and the airplanes. You've seen people who are, you know, some reason Donald Trump has emboldened these people. I don't, you know, as I've said, I don't know what's exactly in that man's heart, but I do know that he has really winked at and given comfort and to people who have these deplorable views. And, you know, I use that word, consciously. And so to expose this, to show people this is not right. This is we cannot have this.
I guess so. But we've always was
she
this
went
is
on,
right
I think,
ever in doubt. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was just gonna say, Eric, with me, she went on, you know, and it wasn't like which made me question her a little bit. And
well,
I thought
I
was also very uncomfortable when she started videotaping the videotaper's child.
Exactly. And that's...
I was bothered by her, but I also, if I'm... Well, I want to be a judge of the woman, but damn, I grab my kid, I get him out of there.
Absolutely you do. The lady points the camera at the baby and says, okay, now I'm videotaping your baby. I'm taping your baby. That can be harmful. That's using your phone as a weapon, and she's using it on your child.
Well, if the baby says something hateful, I'm all for it.
And by the way, about the guy on the Delta plane, if you haven't seen the video of this, a guy is on a flight that's not taking off yet. He is a pro-Trump supporter, and he's saying, Hillary won, take that, you...
Hillary bitches.
Hillary bitches. And... and blah, 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 and then he gets back in his seat. He's removed from the plane and then eventually allowed to get back on the flight. Delta has since said that he'll never fly on their planes again. If that guy had been saying cheerfully, Hillary, and say Hillary won. Hillary won. Hooray. Isn't this great for America and women everywhere? Yay. You might not have liked that if you were a Trump supporter. But would that video generate the same ire? I mean, what he's really doing is just celebrating his guy who won. He used some coarse language. He didn't take a swing at anybody. I don't like this guy, and I don't like what happened. I don't want anybody to talk about.
His demeanor was more threatening than Hillary, yay.
You think so? I mean, threatening to whom? You think that he was going to go after somebody? That if you were sitting next to him, he's obnoxious. But I just think the whole tone of this thing is completely different if he's cheering on Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton.
He wasn't just cheering on Trump. He was taunting people. And the real difference, if you get up and stand up in an airplane, as sort of weird and inappropriate as it would be to stand up and say, yay, my candidate won, hooray, hooray for me. But instead, you know, it was very aggressive. It was aggressive, and it looked threatening to me. If I'd been sitting there, especially if I'd been a smallish woman, and this guy's looming over me in the airplane cabin, pointing his fingers and taunting me and calling me a bitch, I think that really crosses quite a few lines.
I was a little scared, and I was watching it on a computer.
In the safety of your own home or office. Huh?
As I noted in my column, my big problem is that all these people who take these videos take them vertically. You got to turn your camera sideways, people.
Eric has the unique ability to take some things and then just focus on the most minor detail, and then you can't stop thinking about it. And another example of that, Eric, is now I cannot look at Donald Trump that I don't see his ties.
And they hang 4 inches below his belt, which is completely a sartorial offense. A sartorial offense, an extreme felony, a sartorial felony.
What is your take, fellas, on the Green Lady on North Lincoln Avenue, the tavern that is selling off its remaining stock of Miller Coors products and donating the proceeds to Planned Parenthood in the name of Mike Pence? You know, Pete Coors, whose name forms half that company, Miller Coors, is on the board of Miller Coors. He held a fundraiser in July for Donald Trump. And the woman that runs the Green Lady only recently found out about that. So she's selling off all of those bottles at a premium price and then donating it. On their Facebook page, they now list 24 beers to avoid that are owned by that company, Leinenkugel, Blue Moon, Miller Products. I guess that's her prerogative, and maybe that will be good for business. She might lose all the Trump supporters, but she might be the magnet for the liberals, and you can make a living on that. I don't know that this really hurts Coors or Miller. It might actually encourage people to go buy their products that are champions of the incoming president. You know, I suppose those things are ultimately a wash, huh?
Especially when you got a country divided. I mean, I guess when I read the stories, I mean, I don't have any real problem with boycotts. I know some people really think that they're bad. But when you look at the company has won awards from lesbian and gay rights organizations. This is not – it's kind of like the Cubs, right, where they're people who are part of the company who support one political cause, and there are people on the Cubs, for instance. Was it Laura Ricketts?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, who was very liberal, and you have Todd, and I don't know, who's very conservative, is now part of the cabinet. And so you've got – you know, companies are like that. And – I don't think that you look at Miller Coors and say this is this awful company that is using its proceeds to promote this cause you don't believe in. I think it's a very murky case against that company. If you could make a strong case against that company, say like the owner of this company, you know, funnels a lot of his money into that, then I think it's a much clearer case. So I would say that in this one I am not a supporter of this. Yeah. I will not be getting drunk there.
Yeah, I've never walked into a bar and wished they sold Miller Lite. So
it's kind of a moot point in your case.
John,
anyway,
what's your view? You bring this up.
I understand the principle, and I think at the end of the day, it's whether she knows it or not. Great marketing for her, because if the name of the tavern, is it in Lincoln Park, on North Lincoln Avenue?
So give the address and phone number and hours?
I think she's going to do just fine with this plan. But you're right. At the end of the day, if you really hurt Miller Coors, you hurt thousands of people that work for that company. And
well,
you don't know
that
them.
Assumes that people are not going to be drinking some other beer. And I mean, you may hurt some workers, but you're going to be filling the pockets of other. I mean, if this net brings down beer consumption, which I doubt it would do, it just get people to change brands. It's, you know, that I wouldn't worry about. But it's not clear to me at all that the MillerCoors company is a villain here. I mean, somebody on their board has a political cause that he supports.
Well, it's Mr. Coors. I mean, you know, I think that's the danger that the Cubs face, or members of the Cubs team face. If you make a public stand on a controversial political issue or candidate, then you stand to suffer severe consequences.
Well, the newspaper deals with this every election cycle.
You're different, though. Don't you think it's different?
Well, no. Let's go back. We're wrapping up where we started, because it doesn't matter. Todd Ricketts and his family they were never Trumpers. You know, early on, they were never Trumpers.
That's true. But so, they ultimately, he made one of the biggest single donations to the.
Well, I know they came around. They came around, and he was a delegate. But all I'm saying is that. No one. There's no punishment for anything, because it doesn't last. Everything is transient. I just want to go take a nap.
We are going to conclude this podcast with our weekly recommendations of things we are eating, drinking, watching, listening to. Our recommendations. I'll start this week, guys. I want to recommend Eric Zorn's exchange of email with Professor Stephen Prosser about flag burning. Steve, Eric, I read through that whole long exchange you guys had a few years ago, right?
Yes, it was actually about 18 years ago, but yeah.
I thought it was fascinating and really Thanks. Well done. And every time I thought, Eric, you can't. Well, I've talked to Presser many times. He's terrific. You cannot play ball with this guy. And dang, you'd come right back and rip a single up the middle, and then he'd come back and take a shot at you, and it was very interesting. And to be honest with you, my view on flag burning is that it's protected speech, but I think he made a very good case that it shouldn't be, and I thought you handled it very well.
Thanks.
It's worth finding. And how do folks find that?
It's just go to chicagotribune.com/Zorn and scroll down a little bit. It's right there. And we didn't really talk about it. The thing is, there's so much to talk about with these. It's been 2 weeks since we've been together, and there's just so many things have happened. With things that Trump says, things that happen in the national and state. We didn't even touch on the state issues here. But and the flag-burning thing like flared up, and I thought, well, this is a perfect time to exhume this exchange that I had. Only a little bit of it was ever actually published.
Worth reading.
I found it really interesting, and I thought he's a bracing competitor to debate against.
You think? I mean, he's brilliant. He's good, but you were up to the task.
I thought I beat him, my friend. I'm just saying, I invite the verdict of the listening audience.
So. Well, there you go. Steve, what do you like this week?
I'm just about to recommend this, I think I might have before, but there's a writer who's in New York, I think, and he moved to Chicago a few years ago, named Charles Finch. And he's got a series of novels, the Charles Lennox detective series, sort of. The guy was an MP during the Victorian age in London, and... You know, I was just reading. I read about 50 pages last night. When it's everything just a little overwhelming or whatever, Finch does a great job of creating this Victorian world that sort of enchants me. He had an individual novel called The Last Enchantments, but right now his latest book is called The Inheritance. It's a Charles Lennox novel by Charles Finch.
Nicely put. How about you, Eric? What do you recommend?
I've got something a little bit shorter than that. It's an article in Vox, the online magazine. It's called Everything Mattered, Lessons from 2016's Bizarre Presidential Election. And it's by David Roberts. And it's a fairly long look at exactly what happened in the election. It looks at all the various theories as to why Hillary Clinton lost. And it points out that a lot of the things that we say, you know, are probably some minor contributors to this, but the net effect of all of them together was that she lost narrowly in the Electoral College. It's a very smart take on the election. It starts off by saying, look, I was wrong about everything that I'd said. Kind of like we've said here, I was wrong about the stuff that I thought before going into this, and here's why I was wrong. It also points out that a lot of the prognostications about the vote were very, very close, and it wasn't like the media just totally blew this. You know, they missed a little bit of it, but all you had to do was miss a little bit of it to have the Electoral College not turn out. Anyway, Vox, an excellent online publication. There's also some really good stuff about Obamacare in there. That they have this woman, Sarah Cliff, who writes about Obamacare, and she understands and is able to make clear health care policy about as well as anyone I know in journalism. So,
however close that all might have been, are you of the opinion now, because I sort of am, Hillary didn't stand a chance. She didn't have a chance. When I hear how deep these people dig their heels in and how many of them there are out there, you know, it's almost not surprising to me now.
I would go along with that if he had won the popular vote by as much as she won the popular
yeah.
vote. I mean, it's like you know, you change 17.
That's true.
They said 107,000 votes in three different states, and you move those to the different column, and that's not a lot of votes. It's a very small percentage of votes. Then she wins the Electoral College, and we're having a totally different conversation. So yeah, I think she did stand a chance. I think. You know, you look at and this article, it's good because it goes into all these things like, yeah, she should have gone to Wisconsin. She should have done this. She should have done that. If only James. I mean, how much did the James Comey thing figure into it? And, you know, not any one of these things cost her the election. It was just this accumulation of little things that built up. Yeah, I think she stood a chance. I think the Democrats have a very good chance in 2012. 2020, when we, you know, depending on how things go with the Trump administration, I think that they do.
We did an online survey at my radio station in Minnesota, WCCO. How long do you think Trump's tenure will last? 8 years, 4 years, or less than 4 years? And less than 4 years got 54% of the vote.
Really? Do you think they think he's going to be impeached, or do you think
I think he's going to realize how much work it is, and then he's going to say, like all good business executives, I've got my people in place. Good night, everybody. And he's just going to sort of saunter off onto that golf course in the sunset.
One of the interesting things people talk about with him is that his ego is obviously extremely large, and that he wants more than anything, more than any policy position that he has. He wants to succeed. He wants history to say,
well,
gosh,
to be loved.
If only there was room on Mount Rushmore for one more face, it would be Donald Trump. That's what he wants. And so he's going to do, and actually in some ways that gives me hope, because if he is actually looking for things that work and things that are actually going to make lives better for people, especially, you know, middle income, lower income people, because he wants history to remember him as a great president, then I can see him, you know, changing his directions, and I can see him doing things that are actually smart. But
well, it's,
you know,
not like he's politically principled. Yeah,
no, I mean, he isn't. He is very much an opportunist, and he has a huge ego. And as much as those things seem like they're terrifying,
yeah,
they could end up. I mean, this is perhaps way overly optimistic of me, but they could end up being something that would steer him in the right direction. So we'll see.
That's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. His colleague, Kristen McQuarrie, too. She couldn't join us today. Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. Hear me Saturdays from 1 to 3. Thank you, Bob Ferguson, our engineer. Kristen Decker is our producer, and we'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!